support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. After over a decade in office, Jay Inslee is nearing the end of his time as Washington's governor. He signed his last set of bills last week, but there are still plenty of priorities that need the governor's attention, from defending his signature climate change legislation to dealing with the housing crisis and, yes, maybe even deciding for once and for all whether potatoes count as a vegetable. Yes, that is a real issue. We may get into it later. For now, Governor Jay Inslee, welcome, and thank you for being back on the show.
Good morning. It is a beautiful morning in our state.
It is a beautiful morning in our state. Before we get to the substance of the bills that you signed last week, how did it feel holding that lawmaking pen for the last time?
Just the way it felt the first time, which is a huge honor of helping Washington on this constant climb of progress that we made for the last 12 years. And it's a huge honor, and it's a thrill because, you know, there were quite a number of times. Let's see, how many bills did I sign? There was a whole bunch. many bills.
You signed a lot.
4,212 bills. And arguably each of them, either in very minor or quite major ways, had the capacity to help people in their lives. And that's just, it's a wonderful honor to be able to do that. So I would say it's just as thrilling in the last one as the first one. I felt the same, which is, this is a great state. We're continuing to make progress. We're leading the country and indeed the world in a lot of different ways, and many of these bills accomplish that. So as Louis Armstrong said, James Brown, I feel good.
True to form, you signed a lot of new environmentally focused laws last week. Things like helping school buses transition from diesel to electric, requiring some native plants in large landscaping projects. One bill that you signed will help Washington's carbon auctions link with Quebec and California. We're going to get to more on the future of carbon markets in a minute. Before we get to that, though, there was one that stood out as somewhat contentious, and that is a new bill related to Puget Sound Energy. That's House Bill 1589. Jerry Cornfield at the Washington State Standard wrote that this law will let PSE speed up how quickly it's passing the cost of natural gas infrastructure to its customers. So this would open the door for higher rates in the near term. It's similar to a 15-year mortgage versus a 30-year, according to Jerry. Puget Sound Energy is the state's largest natural gas provider. Governor, what's the purpose of this change? Why make it easier for PSE to pass along costs to customers?
Well, this is a planning bill to help PSE plan for the transition that we know that has to happen. Look, we don't have a choice here. Mother Nature has given us a work order, and that is to transition off of dangerous pollution and polluting sources of energy. That includes methane gas. It is a toxic material. It creates pollution in many different ways. It increases asthma. Your kids' asthma rates are 14% higher when you have it in your home. And Mother Nature has told us that if we don't get off of these sources of fuel, our forests are continue to burn down because of climate change. Our water will be too hot and salmon will go extinct. We will not have snow in the mountains. We will have continuing drought. We will have towns burned down. You know, you ask about my legacy or my time in office. I've had two entire towns burned down because of these incredible fires we're experiencing because of climate change. So we don't have a choice in this matter. Mother Nature has told us what the deal is, which is we have to decarbonize. And in doing that, we have to help our utilities find a way to do that. And this basically is simply a planning document which allows PSE to move forward with other requirements. We have required them to decarbonize, and if you're going to require them to decarbonize, they have to find a way to finance this. And so this is a planning document that allows them a way to do that in the fairest way possible. And I like the fact that you've linked it with quite a number of our successes that are associated with that, to allow us to get electric school buses. That is not free, but that is a good investment so our children's lungs aren't polluted with pollution from fossil fuels. In clean building standards, the same thing has happened. Usually things that are worth doing aren't totally free, and that includes saving our children from the ravages of pollution that is associated with climate change. So this is a fair bill. I think it was well-crafted, and I'm glad we got it through. It's a one part of the very important things we're doing. Because I'll tell you something about Washington State. We don't cotton to climate deniers. We recognize this pollution is harming our children's lungs. You know, we had kids, think about this, who couldn't go out and play for a week or two because of the forest fires that have been caused by this fossil fuel pollution. That is simply not acceptable to the people of the state of Washington. And this suite of bills is allowing us to lead the country in a way to give us cleaner air.
Some of the people, though, Governor, who wanted you to veto a section of the bill, I mean, they are kind of the natural allies of your effort. You know, the Sierra Club, the Sightline Institute, they're pointing to the fact that in the original version of this bill, so Puget Sound Energy governing how they can charge for natural gas, there was a relaxation of something called obligation to serve. So the obligation to hook everybody who wants to be hooked up to natural gas to make that happen. Now, the environmental groups had wanted that to be relaxed in the bill, but it was stripped out in the middle of the, you know, the process in the legislature. But the part that stayed was something called accelerated depreciation, which, you know, allows them to pass on a little bit more cost earlier. So again, like a 15-year mortgage versus a 30-year fixed mortgage. You know, of course, there are costs with this transition away from fossil fuels, and PSE is going to have to be transitioning and will have to pay those costs. But the environmental groups who sent you a letter about this section wanting you to veto this said that the bill as it stood was prioritizing the investors in PSE rather than individual ratepayers, that this was going to mean that people's bills would go up too quickly. How do you respond to that? And why didn't you veto that section?
Well, I actually shared those views that the original version of the bill I would have preferred. But there is something you have to realize. I'm not king. I can't write these bills myself. We have to get the votes from the legislature. And the only way to get the votes for the legislature in order to have achieved this goal was the way we got them. That provision which I favored had to come out of the bill. And that depreciation you've noted had to be in the bill if the bill was going to pass and get my signature. So this is just a legislative reality. If I'd had, you know, different legislators, perhaps we could have had a different bill. But compromise is part of democracy and making forward. And I'm glad that we made this step forward again so we can have cleaner air for our Washington kids. Now, 90% of our discussion has been about the controversial part. I will tell you that I feel very, very pleased this year that we made progress on linkage so we can reduce the cost of this program with California and Quebec. We made progress in getting electric school buses. We made progress on clean building. We made progress on limiting 6 PPD, which is death to our salmon. We made enormous progress. I'm not going to let a small argument about a relatively small issue cloud the tremendous successes our state had this year.
Let's talk about, you mentioned linkages, so let's get right into the carbon marketplace in the state. We got to talk about the big gas pump in the room. Just for background for folks who are not familiar, you will be hearing a lot more about this as the campaign season ramps up. The Climate Commitment Act is this 2021 law. It created the state's new carbon offset auctions. Under the law, big greenhouse gas producing businesses like oil and gas companies have to purchase offsets to meet their carbon reduction mandates. Now, auctions have raised a couple billion dollars so far for green energy projects in this state, but they've also been blamed for raising gas prices. Republicans have turned this into a political fight to repeal the whole law, and they've got an initiative now that's qualified on the ballot. So voters will have to decide in November what to do about the Climate Commitment Act. So with all of that to set the stage, Governor, what is your case for preserving the law, for preserving the Climate Commitment Act?
Well, first off, I'm not blaming you for this, but most of the commentators have left out the single most important thing that this bill does, something that people are trying to repeal because they frankly don't care about pollution in our kids' lungs. And that is that this bill creates a limit, a cap, a binding legally forced limit on the amount of pollution that goes into our kids' lungs and also causes climate change. It's very important to note that because this effort and this initiative is to eliminate that cap. The effort of this initiative is to allow unlimited amount of pollution, to strip our children of the protection against this pollution. And most people talk about just the financial aspect of this bill, as you have, and ignore the fact that the most important thing this bill does is limit pollution. It says that you can't legally put more than this amount of pollution in the state of Washington. Now, I think this is the right thing to have that cap. We have limits on the amount of arsenic that's in our water. We have limits on the amount of sulfur dioxide that's in our air. And we should and do now have a limit on the amount of pollution that is causing asthma and respiratory distress and massive forest fires and huge climate change, the amount you can put into the air. And this initiative would eliminate that protection for our children and our state. So the first thing we got to realize is that you can't eliminate a protection against pollution that this initiative would do. On the linkage issue, the way this works is we limit the amount of pollution. We force polluters to pay. The polluters have to pay for their pollution, and they have to buy at auction these credits. We have now linked or intend to link our markets with California and Quebec in that auction market. And the reason is we think this has the capacity over time to reduce the compliance costs, reduce the cost of actually at auction buying those permits. And that's a good thing. We like to keep those compliance costs low and as stable as possible. Fortunately, those prices have come down to some degree. And so we want to keep this law as it is, keep protection against pollution, keep the compliance costs reasonably low as they hopefully can be with this joining of our markets. We think this is a good strategy moving forward.
Yeah, so the linkages are meant to keep the volatility down, to keep the prices down. Let's talk about how the auctions were structured in the first place, though. You know, we're about a year in, and these days the price of these carbon allowances that companies have to buy, that those have dropped significantly. The March 6th auction saw allowances going for just a little under $26, which is roughly half the price that companies were paying last year. But I have to say, Governor, it feels like the sticker shock from those early, very expensive auctions, they peaked at $63 for allowances. It damaged confidence in the system, and it opened the Climate Commitment Act up to this conservative-backed repeal effort, saying that, you know, the compliance costs were causing the companies to pass the cost on to consumers at the pump. And I want to know how you feel in hindsight now. Was this flawed design? Were there problems with how, for example, ambitious the state's carbon reduction targets were right off the bat? Basically too steep a curve right away, that we maybe learned some lessons from here.
Well, listen, the compliance costs were higher than the models predicted, in part because all we had to go on is the California markets, and our experience was a little different than California. And nobody has a perfect way to look into the future. It's always easier to look backwards. I don't look backwards. I look forward. I'm proud of our state. First off, because we're taking action against climate. And when you start a new program, it's not shocking that you have some ups and downs. I'm happy that the cost has come down dramatically since that period of time. I've seen estimates that, you know, the price differential is down in the 13 to 20 cent range or even less right now by some credible people who've looked at this issue. So that's a good thing. We're happy about it. And I'm not shocked that when you start a new program, there are some fits and starts. But I think we are now in a more stable position and will be more stable because of this linkage. And fundamentally, look, I come back to this issue. Are we going to just let our state continue to burn down and suffer these recurrent droughts? We're heading into the second drought year this year where there could even be curtailment of water supplies. are we going to let our kids live in a future where asthma rates are epidemic in some of our communities? Are we going to let our disproportionately impacted communities breathe this stuff? No, we're not going to do that. We're going to take action. We have taken action. It's proving successful. It is reducing pollution. We're pleased that the compliance costs have gone down. And we've done some things to help some people, including in this bill to give $200 utility rebates to 2 million people. Families with 2 million people will receive these rebates to help with their utility bills. So I think that the legislature has handled this in a responsible way, in a way that can simultaneously help the health of our kids and have something that is economically sustainable.
Governor, we got some questions on the line, and I just wanted to play you a voicemail related to this from Angela in Seattle. So here's Angela's question.
Why do you think carbon auctions are a good idea when we're trying to get to zero carbon footprint? To me, it's a terrible idea. Why not pass laws instead to force these companies that are spewing so much emission to stop doing that and to become zero carbon?
Governor, do you have any response to what Angela is asking? Maybe just if you can simply regulate out of this rather than require the companies to buy offsets?
Well, we do have a number of regulatory approaches, including our clean fuel standard and clean car standard. We have building efficiency standards that are the best in the nation. We have the first requirement in the country that does require having access to heat pumps. So we have quite a number of regulatory approaches. But we're not going to make it illegal tomorrow to drive a gas-powered car. That's a regulation that, you know, would be too much of a shock for all of us and the system. And we have to have a system that heads in that direction. Now, we have set guideposts in a regulatory approach that utilities have to be 100%. That is the regulatory approach. And this is a way to have a glide path towards that zero carbon economy that we have to get to in the next several decades. But it is a glide path, not a cliff. And we're just not going to outlaw any use of fossil fuels starting on Friday. That would just be too much of an enormous shock to the system. I think that our combination of our regulatory system we have right now, together with this cap, and again, I want to come back to this, and it's not your fault that you may not have heard about this, but this is a regulatory approach because it caps the amount of pollution that can go in the atmosphere. And it is a steadily declining cap. So this auction system will auction fewer permits every year over time, heading towards zero. So that's what we are doing. And then you figure out, okay, if we're going to have limits on the amount of pollution, who gets to pollute? Well, we can't just have the governor picking John gets so many tons and Henry gets so many tons. You just can't do that. You have to have a market-based way of distributing those permits.
Right, and then that marketplace is raising money for other projects, which you know, are priorities along the lines of climate resilience, things like that. Yeah, thank you for explaining that again.
If I can, let's spend a moment on the benefits of this bill. They are extraordinary. This $2 billion basically is recycled right back to Washingtonians. So children get electric school buses. We've already had children have 8 million rides on buses that are free now that their parents don't have to pay for. Single mothers are getting insulation in their homes and solar panels so their utility bills can go down extremely low. I remember talking to this agricultural worker, you know, who picks apples in Toppenish. She was just thrilled now with insulation and solar panels. Her utility bills are almost zero. Our kids get air filtration systems, so when they're in school and these massive climate change-fueled fires hit, they can get filtration systems in their schools so that they can breathe. We have a utility credit that I talked about, $200 to go to lower-income folks to help with their utility bills. We have a huge, huge part of our transportation budget comes from the Climate Commitment Act. So building transportation systems is now dependent on the Climate Commitment Act. If this went away, we're going to see massive stops of many projects around the state of Washington, and we know what our traffic is like right now. So there are huge benefits Washingtonians are getting from this, from the the dollars that are raised for the auction. If this was eliminated or we had a strictly regulatory approach, we would not have access to the help that Washingtonians are getting in this regard. And I'm seeing this now going around the state, including the job creation.
Yeah, Governor, I do have to move on just because we only have a couple more minutes with you and we have so many questions from folks all around the state. And I understand you're going to be working more on this issue as it goes forward. I hope we can keep talking about it. I wanted to ask you about our mental health system in the state. We've been looking a lot at this issue because there's a new podcast that KUOW and the Seattle Times are publishing that's called Lost Patients. It's about what happened to folks who were left Northern State Hospital after the big, you know, closure of psychiatric facilities in the 70s. Across the country, really. In 2018, you announced this plan to transform Washington's mental health care system. The plan was that, you know, Western State Mental Hospital, it would only be serving patients accused of crimes that were coming from jails, and smaller state-run centers were supposed to serve patients that are sent for psychiatric commitment by civil courts, but they're not facing charges. Now, some of those smaller facilities have come online, but, you know, a goal of 2023 for all that system to be up and running has come and gone. How do you assess how the transformation of our mental health care system is going and what more needs to be done?
It's going forward, which is the direction that I always want to go. And we've had massive, massive improvements in mental health that have been financed in this session in the legislature. An additional $400 million of new investments is coming along. We've added something in the order of 600 beds during this process. We are moving forward on Western State. We are in construction for that facility. That is working forward. I just went to the opening, which is just so thrilling, at the University of Washington. The very first teaching hospital just for behavioral health in the country, we opened up, we're going to open up here in a couple of weeks for 150 beds. We have quite a number of these community centers coming in. So we're making very, very substantial progress. We would like it to have been faster. On occasion, we've had some siting challenges where communities have resisted some of our siting, which has been most unfortunate. And we need some local community help to be able to site these facilities. But I can't overstate how pleased I am this year that we took another great, great forward step on behavioral health. Now, that's part sort of associated with our efforts against fentanyl as well. And we need it. We have kids now having to wait, you know, 6 months to when they're having a psychiatric episode to get treatment. We need this improvement. We are seeing it. I'm pleased we're making that progress.
All right. We had a lot of questions about, you know, what you think the next priorities are for the next governor. We only have about a minute and a half here, Governor. Any final thoughts here? You know, Elizabeth and Edmonds, for example, called asking, what are the top three priorities you think are facing your successor in the governor's mansion?
Well, you know, if I wasn't so humble, I would say it's going to be so hard to fill my shoes. But I'm, you know,
number one, filling your shoes. Okay, what else?
That will be easy. I will be forgotten in 72 hours, I'm sure. we are going to continue to make sure we continue improving investments in behavioral health. That will certainly be a need. We're going to make sure that the Climate Commitment Act is protected and is effectuated. This linkage bill, I think, is a move forward. The fentanyl crisis will remain unabated for some period of time. I can't say we're going to solve that by January of 2025. So maybe there's three very significant things that the efforts will continue. But I think the direction we're on is the right one. I think the pace of improvement we're on is very, very substantial. So I would hope that we could continue the direction the state is moving, which is forward. And I really kind of reiterate that. I think that the choice is always whether you move forward or you move backwards. And if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. This is a state that believes in moving forward. And we need to continue to move forward on climate change. We should not go backwards like some people are urging us to do and destroying the country's best protections for our children's health. We should not go backwards on behavioral health. We should continue that building program. And we certainly need to go forward on our attacking fentanyl. So that's the direction that I hope that will continue. I hope that we will continue to protect a woman's right of choice, which is now under attack in our state, which is something people need to be aware of. People think that we're out of the woods on a woman's right of choice. That is not right. There is a group of people, not in my party, who still want to take a woman's right of choice. There is a national effort to do that. And I'm very hopeful that the next governor, and I have some confidence that they will, and I have a person in mind, who will protect a woman's right of choice. And that's going to be one of the most important decisions to make sure we don't go backwards to previous centuries in the state of Washington when it comes to individual decision making.
Okay, Governor, before you go, just a really quick, fun one from Oslin in North Bend. Here's the question.
Painting. I am curious why politicians go to painting after they retire. So which one would you be doing? Acrylic, oil, or watercolor?
Acrylic, oil, or watercolor, Governor Inslee?
Well, I am bad at all of those. But I have to say, I haven't waited till I'm out of office. I'm looking at a collage of Mount Rainier right now that I just took. I just had the cultural attaché from Tasmania visit me, and we were talking about Mount Rainier, and I got to show him my collage. I cut up a New York Times one time and did a Mount Rainier collage. So I use all kinds of media, and I'm bad at all of them.
Okay, mixed media for the governor, and definitely not a post-retirement thing. It's been an ongoing hobby for Governor Inslee. Thank you very much for being here, and I hope we can keep the conversations going here in your final year in office and beyond.
Thank you. Your listeners are some of the smartest people in our state, so thanks for broadcasting.
We agree with that, Governor. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.